Brother, if you want to go ahead and open your Bibles, we're studying from Nehemiah. That's on page 729, Debbie. That'll be page 729. Excuse me? Now you got me confused, but we're thankful that you're with us. Brother Mark, doesn't he do a good job with the announcements? We might just make him official announcement guy, but he does a good job with those announcements. He mentioned Brother Carol Seitz. Let me kind of bring you up to date on his health situation just a little bit. The cancer has spread into the bone in his right leg, toward the ankle. He was sent to a bone cancer specialist at UAMS who told him, said, that's treatable. And they are treating that now. They did find a spot on his lung, and as of yesterday, they're still trying to decide exactly what they're going to do about that. But he takes a small pill every day, and then once every 3 months, he takes a shot. Eddie and Bob and I went to McCroy last Monday evening and heard him preach in a gospel meeting effort there. It's the first time I've seen him since he started these treatments. He has lost some weight. That's pretty obvious to us. He's walking with a very noticeable limp. But boy, he can still preach, can he? Okay, all right. I thought maybe it was just me, but I appreciate good preaching. But he's doing well. Would appreciate your prayers. I just talked to him yesterday. We talk almost every day, and he's doing just pretty well. They're very thankful that he has had no sickness to go along with these treatments that he's taking so far, and we pray that that doesn't happen. So please keep him in your prayers. His next is next Sunday, right? A one-day gospel meeting, kind of like we did here. Shane's cousin, Jade's cousin, Shane Ott, he heard about Carol being here for that one day, and if he didn't schedule the same kind of thing at the church in Judge Sonia. So Carol's going to do that next Sunday. That's the 10th, isn't it? Next Sunday for them. So please keep him in your prayers. I know he'd appreciate it a great deal. Nehemiah is one of those great servants of God that we read about in the pages of our Bible. I mean, there's just not anything negative said about Nehemiah. One of the few in all of the Bible that you read about him, there's just not anything negative said about him. So you can help me. You can help me. I want us to look at the different stages of Nehemiah's life. In Nehemiah chapter 1:1 down through chapter 2, verse number 8 and verse 8, we read about Nehemiah as a slave. He must have been pretty young at this time, because there's a lot of time that's going to pass from the time we pick up Nehemiah's life in Nehemiah 1 verse 1 to the point that the book ends 13 chapters later when it ends. Quite a bit of time passes in there. So it's assumed that Nehemiah was pretty young. Nehemiah may have been born into the captivity of the Babylonians or the captivity of the Medes and the Persians who conquered the Babylonians. And as I said, he's just one of those special servants of God. I think he's one you want to be like. I know he's one I'd like to be like. He's just a servant. He's just at work for the Lord in all of these stages of his life. He's at work for the Lord. Now, I would just have you notice how the book begins, how this book begins. Verse number 1 of chapter 1. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, and it came to pass in the month Chislu, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan, the palace. So it's the month Chislu, in the 20th year. Chislu is the ninth month, the ninth month in the Jewish calendar year. It corresponds with our month of September, October. Our months don't just match up with them, but it kind of fits that part of September, part of October. And it's in the 20th year. It's in the 20th year. And he receives word from some of his brethren and certain men of Judah, verse number 2, who came and he asked them about the Jews that had escaped the captivity, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. So how are things going back in Judea? How are things going back in Jerusalem? Remember, the Babylonians had destroyed Jerusalem and had taken the best of everything and carted it off, the best of everything, even the people, and had carted it off to Babylon. But some of them had escaped, Jeremiah being one of those. Some of them had escaped this captivity, and they were remaining back there. And here comes word now, all of these years later, here comes word to Nehemiah about how things are going back in Jerusalem. And the word goes something like this: it's not going very well. The city is in ruins. The city has no walls around it. Now, in that day and age, to live in a city that had no walls meant you were in constant danger of marauders and bandits, and even the wild animals could come into the city and give you all kinds of trouble. And the walls of Jerusalem are unbuilt. And Nehemiah says of himself that when I heard these words, verse 4, when I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. And he prays one of the greatest prayers recorded in all the Word of God, in my opinion. I just notice how he starts it. Verse 5. And I said, I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven, the great and terrible God that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him and observe commandments. Let thine ear now be attentive and thine eyes open, that thou mayest hear the prayers of thy servant, which I pray before thee day and night. He'll confess the sins of his father and of himself and the sins of the children of Israel. He'll confess their sins. What a beautiful prayer. Look at the last verse in chapter 1. O Lord, I beseech thee. He's still in his prayer. O Lord, I beseech thee. Let now thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant, to the prayer of thy servants, who desire to fear thy name and prosper. I pray thee, thy servant, this day, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man. Which man's he talking about? Do you think? Look at the last sentence in the chapter. What is he? What's his position? He's a cupbearer to the king. He's a cupbearer to the king. He's made up his mind, this situation can't go on. I'm going to have to say something to the king. He's a cupbearer. What is a cupbearer? He He tasted the wine before the king. This is the kind of job you want now. You get to taste the wine before the king. Now, why would you taste the wine before the king? To make sure it wasn't poison. Hey, listen, this is a great job, isn't it? This is the kind of job you want. Hey, you get to taste the wine. If you don't die, king gets to drink it, right? You get to taste the wine, no, and if you do die, the king lives, right? He's a servant. He's a slave. But he's made up his mind. I'm going to have to take this to the king. I want you to look now with me at chapter 2, verse number 1. And it came to pass in the month Nisan in the 20th year. So it's the same year, the 20th year, it's in the same year of Artaxerxes, the king. It's in the 20th year. We're in the same year. But Nisan is the first month in the Jewish calendar. Now, there are 12 months in that Jewish calendar. And you got Chislu, which was associated with the ninth month in the Jewish calendar, eighth and ninth month in our calendar. And now you've got the first month of a new year. Of the new year. Now he's not counting time like we would from January 1 through. He's counting the years that the king has been in power. So this king probably didn't go into power on the first day of Nisan, of the first month of the year. He may have gone into power in the middle of the year or something like that. But here's what I want you to see. How long has Nehemiah been praying about this? About 4 months, hasn't he? About 4 months. We usually think of him just praying and then, boy, the next time he gets a chance, he goes into the king. That's not the way it's happened. For 4 months, this man has been praying about this. Not only has he been praying about it, he's been dreading it. I'm going to have to say something to the king. And he's not looking forward to it, but it's got to be done. So in the first month, in Nisan, the first month of the year, it's his turn to appear before the king. He says, I took wine and I gave it to the king. Now I had not been before time sad in his presence. So the king had never seen me sad before. Wherefore the king said unto me, why is your countenance sad? Seeing that are you sick? Is that what it is? You're not sick. It can't be anything else but sorrow of heart. Have you ever looked at someone and you could tell there's something wrong? There's something going on with them. I don't know what it is. It doesn't seem to be physical. It's not something like that, but there's something going on. And the king can see it in Nehemiah. It's got to be that your sorrow of heart. And Nehemiah said, then was I sore afraid. Why is he afraid? The time's come. The time has come to speak up. To speak up. And watch what he does in verse number 3. And I said unto the king, let the king live forever. Why should my countenance be sad when the city and the place of my father and the sepulchres lieth in waste and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Then the king said unto me, what can I do for you? Now watch. Verse 4, last phrase, verse 4. The king says, what can I do for you? And what does Nehemiah do? Last sentence, verse 4. What does Nehemiah do? He prays to God, right? He's about to ask. He's about to ask permission to go and to help get this work organized and get these walls built. Not only is he going to ask for those kind of for permission to leave, he's going to ask for a letter from the king to the governors so that he can have safe passage. And to those who own the forest and take care of the forest so that the timber and the wood and those kind of things that are needed to rebuild these walls can be obtained and at his disposal. This is a pretty big request. And he prays to God. And he gets on with it. At this time, Nehemiah is a slave. He's a cupbearer. But as a cupbearer, where's his interest? Where's his concern? With God's people. Yes or no? With God's people. As a cupbearer, as a slave, Nehemiah is doing his job. Which job? Well, he's doing the job of a cupbearer. That's that job. But what job is he also doing? He's doing the work of the Lord. He's involved in the work of the Lord as a cupbearer, as a slave. He's involved in the work of the Lord. And the king grants him permission. He said, how long are you going to be gone? When can I expect you back? And the king grants him permission. Beginning in chapter 2, verse number 9, and running through the last verse in chapter 4, verse number 23, we have Nehemiah, the builder. When Nehemiah gets to Jerusalem, he's there for, verse number 9 says, and I came to the governors before the river and gave the king's letters to them and all of that. There was some opposition. In verse number 11, he says, so I came to Jerusalem and I was there 3 days. He says, I rose up in the night and I and a few men with me. Neither told I any man what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. Neither was there any beast with me save the beast that I was upon. In the middle of the night, he and just a few, they get up to survey the work to be done. They ride, Nehemiah rides around Jerusalem. And as he does, he sees that this gate is down. This gate is torn down. This wall is in shambles. He reaches a place where there is so much debris that there's not one place that the beast that he's riding on can put its foot. There's a lot of work to be done. He then comes to the people in verse number 17, and he says to them, you see the distress that we're in. How Jerusalem lies in waste. The gates thereof are burned with fire. Come and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. To live in a city where the gates have been burned and the walls have been down, it must be because they're poor. It must be because they have no God to provide for them, no God to care for them, and they're looked upon as a people of reproach. Nehemiah says, come on, let's build so people don't look at us like that anymore, so people don't view us that way anymore. Come on, let's build. Let's get going here. Here's a way he encouraged them, verse number 18. He said, then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me. I told them how good God's been to me. I prayed that he'd be with me. I had to make this request to the king, and I prayed that he'd be with me, and the king's heart would be open to my request. And I prayed, and as I prayed, the opportunity was given me. And the king said, what do you want from me? And I prayed to God. And he gave me everything I requested. Notice he doesn't say, the king has been good to me. He said, the hand of my God has been upon me, and He, my God, has been good to me. Has been good to me. And the people said in verse number 18, and they said, let's rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for the good of this work. And they get started building. Now, from here through chapter 4, verse number 23, there's a lot of things that go on. They began to build, and everything just goes hunky-dory. No problems to face at all. You know better. You know better. No one has ever begun a great work for the Lord, but what there was an opposition to it in one way or another. And Nehemiah and the children of Israel, when they decide we're going to rebuild the walls of this city, here came the opposition. There were some men who were looked upon as men of authority who lived in that area. And they first began to mock them. Look at the walls they're building. Well, a fox could jump up on that wall and it'd fall down. They don't know what they're doing. They began to come under attack. I mean physical attack, fearing for their lives. And so Nehemiah decides to arm the workers. Y'all remember this part, right? He decides to arm the workers. And some of them would stand with spears while others of them worked. They would sleep in their clothes. The only time they changed their clothes was just to have them washed, ready to go to battle in a moment's notice. Nehemiah had trumpeters with him. The walls of that city were huge. They were huge. And if someone attacked on the far side of the city, these on the other side of the building, on the other side of the city, on that part of the wall, might not even know about it. And so Nehemiah said, hey, if you hear the trumpet, you come immediately. You get there and get there now. And he organized them even in defense, but they just kept on building and kept on building. Now, here's another stage in Nehemiah's life. We begin with Nehemiah as a servant, as a slave. And even then, Nehemiah was about the work of God. Here we see Nehemiah, though. You might think about him as a blue-collar worker. He's in there with, let's build, he says. Let's build. Not you build and I'll watch. Let's build. Here's Nehemiah. He's in there with them. He's involved in every aspect of it. He's right in there with them. And here you see him as that kind of blue-collar worker. And what kind of work is he about? You say, well, he's building walls. He's building the wall of the city. Yes, but whose work's he about? He's about the work of God. He's about the work of God, whether he's a slave, a servant, a cupbearer to the king, or whether he's in Jerusalem, literally with his hands on the stones, with his fingers in the mortar, with his hands on the saw, with his hands grasping the hammer, rebuilding those gates. Nehemiah is about the work of the Lord. In chapter 5, we see another stage. I guess I could keep y'all going, couldn't I? Oh, Dan's doing a good job of it. We see another stage in Nehemiah's life. In chapter 5, verses 1 through verse number 13, let me just cite the verses for you and you pick up on it. There was a great cry of the people and their wives against the brethren of the Jews. What were they crying about? For there were that said, our sons and our daughters are many. Therefore we take up corn for them, that we may eat and live. Hey, we have a lot of sons and we have a lot of daughters, and it takes a lot to feed them. So we have to have corn. We have to have grain. But watch what was happening. Some of them,
said this, some also that were there said, we have mortgaged our lands, vineyards, and houses that we might buy corn because of the dearth. So what have they had to do in order to feed their families? They had to mortgage, right? Had to mortgage their property in order to feed their families. Look at verse 4. There were also that said, we have borrowed money for the king's tribute, and that upon our lands and upon our vineyards. We got a tax lien against our vineyards and against our lands. Verse number 5. Yet now our flesh is as the flesh of our brethren, our children as their children. And lo, we bring into bondage our sons and our daughters to be servants. What were they doing in order to pay their debts? Selling their sons and daughters into slavery to pay their debts. I just got to read you this last part of verse number 5. And some of our daughters are brought into bondage already. Neither is it in our power to buy them back. For other men have our lands and our vineyards. The wise man was right when he said that the debtor is ruled by the loaner. The debtor is ruled by the loaner. We don't have the money to buy our daughters back. They're already there, and we don't have the money to buy them back because other men have our lands and our vineyards. In verse number 5, Nehemiah said, I was very angry when I heard their cry of these words. He goes right into action. He goes right into action. He speaks to their nobles and to the rulers in verse number 7. You exact usury? Every one of his brother? He said, and I set a great assembly against him. I called everyone to hear. You're setting a usury against your brethren? It's unbelievable. I said to them, we, after our ability, have redeemed our brethren, the Jews, which were sold unto the heathen, and will you even sell your brethren? Or shall they be sold unto us? Then held they their peace, and they found nothing to answer. Verse number 10, he told them in no uncertain terms, last sentence, last phrases in verse number 10, I pray you, let us leave off this usury. Stop this. This is not right. This is not right. Rather, restore, I pray you, to them, even this day, their lands, their vineyards, their olive yards, their houses, and also the 100th part of the money and of the corn and the wine, the oil that you exact of them. And they said, we'll restore it. And he said, you better. I'm paraphrasing, but folks, verse number 13, he said, and I shook my lap and said, so God shake out every man from his house and from his labor that performs not this promise. You better. You better. Now, what's Nehemiah's role here? He's serving as banker. You might think about this as him being a white-collar worker. He's now in the banking business. He's now dealing with usury. He's dealing with money. He's dealing with finance. But what's he involved in? You say, well, he's dealing with people who have mistreated their own brethren by putting them in debt to them. Yeah. But whose work is it that he's doing? The Lord's work. It doesn't make any difference whether he's a cupbearer.
It doesn't make any difference whether he's a builder, a blue-collar worker, or he's a white-collar worker. In every stage of his life, he's involved in the work of the Lord. What a man. What a servant. You change my role, he says. You change my role. You take me out of being a cupbearer. You make me a builder. I'll still be doing the same thing. Yes or no? I'll still be doing the same thing. Hey, you take me out of a builder's role, put me in a white-collar job. I'll still be doing the same thing. What's that? Serving my God. It doesn't make any difference. I'm a servant of God. There's one other I want you to see. It's found in beginning in verse number 14 of chapter 5. Look at this. Moreover, from that time, I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judea. Their governor in the land of Judea. He's appointed a governor here. You can read about this through really down through verse 19. It is really all that talks about. But he becomes their governor. He says, and as their governor, I never took a salary. I never took one dime. I'm paraphrasing how he says that. He says it in terms like this. He said, but the former governors that had been before you, they were chargeable to the people, and they'd taken them bread and wine, besides 40 shekels of silver. Yea, even their servants bear rule over the people. But so did not I, because of the fear of God. This is a special governor here. Look at verse 19. Oh, by the way, at the end of every one of these sections, I should have pointed this out to you, but at the end of every one of these little sections that I pointed out to you, there'll be something just about like this that is said. Verse 19. Think upon me, my God, for good, according to all that I have done for this people. So now he's a ruler. Now he's the governor over the land. And what's he doing? Come on, church. What's he doing? Serving God. Serving God. It doesn't make any difference whether he's a slave or a builder or a banker or a governor. He's doing the same thing. Men don't know what to do with men like this. I'm telling you. Let's kind of. I've heard of it, folks. Let's kind of promote him, and that'll get him off and get him quiet. That'll slow him down. He'll get involved in all this other stuff. That'll slow him down. Oh no, not Nehemiah. You put him anywhere you want him. You do anything you want to with him, he's going to be a servant of God. It makes no difference what. Just one more. Nehemiah, by the way, serves as governor for 12 years. I told you there's quite a bit of time that passes. Nehemiah serves as the governor of Judea for 12 years. Don't take my word for it. It's in your Bible. Read it for yourself. At the end of 12 years, he's called back. He's called back to Babylon, if you would. He's called back. It's the last chapter of this book I want to take you to. Chapter 13. Chapter 13. I want to begin in verse number 4, just for the sake of our time. Just for the sake of our time. And before this, Elisha, the priest. Now here's the priest. The priest who's responsible for that temple that's been rebuilt. Eliashib, the priest, having oversight of the chamber of the house of God, was allied unto Tobiah. Tobiah. He's not a Jew. By the way, this man, Eliashib, this priest, and Tobiah, this man who's not a Jew, are related because of marriage. Eliashib has given his daughter to marry Tobiah. You'll have to research that yourself, but check it out. It's in here. It's in here. And Eliashib, who's over this chamber of the house of God, was allied unto Tobiah. And he had prepared for him, Eliashib had prepared for Tobiah in the house of God now, in the house of God, a great chamber where aforetime they laid the meat offerings, the frankincense, the vessels, the tithes, the corn, the new wine, the oil, which was commanded to be given to the Levites and the singers and the porters and the offerings of the priests. So this chamber where these offerings that were to be used to take care of the Levites was to be stored has been cleared out, and Tobiah has been given that as his room in the temple, in the house of God. Verse number 6. This is an important verse. Verse number 6. But in all this time, Nehemiah says, in all this time was not I at Jerusalem. I was not at Jerusalem. It's as if to say, if I had been, that wouldn't have happened. I was not at Jerusalem, for in the 32nd year of Artaxerxes, the king of Babylon, came I unto the king, and after certain days I obtained the leave of the king. I returned. And when I returned, I found this. I came to Jerusalem, and I understood of the evil that Eliashib did for Tobiah in preparing him a chamber in the courts of the house of God. It grieved me, he said. It grieved me, verse number 8. It grieved me sore. Therefore I cast all of the household stuff of Tobiah out of the chamber. All of Tobiah's stuff, I threw it out. I got rid of it. I tossed it out. I commanded, and they cleansed those chambers. And therewith brought I again the vessels of the house of the Lord and the meat offerings and the frankincense. Verse number 10, important verse. And I perceived that the portion of the Levites had not been given to them. I recognized what had happened. That portion that was designated for the Levites, it hadn't been collected. It hadn't been given to them. Tobiah had the room where that was supposed to be stored. I restored all of that. I took care of all of that. I cleaned all of that up. I got that situation rectified. Verse number 15. In those days, I saw in Jerusalem some treading wine presses on the Sabbath, and bringing in sheaves and lading asses, and also wine and grapes and figs and all manner of burdens, which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I testified against them in the day wherein they sold those victuals. He talks about some men from Tyre who brought in fish and all manner of ware, and they sold them on the Sabbath day, and the children of Judah bought them in Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. He contends with them, and he commands that from dark on the day the Sabbath begins, from that evening the gates were to be closed. So merchants do? They just camp outside the gate. They camp outside the walls of Jerusalem. And they did that for a day or two until Nehemiah noticed what was happening. And he drove them out. He drove them away. I'm in verse number 19. He says, and some of my servants said at the gates that there should be no more burden brought in on the Sabbath day. So the merchants selling all kinds were lodged without Jerusalem once or twice. Then I testified against them and said unto them, why lodge ye about the wall? If you do so again, I'll lay my hands on you. From that time forth, they didn't come on the Sabbath day anymore. He rectifies that. He takes care of that. Verse number 22, I commanded the Levites that they should cleanse themselves and get about the business of working in that temple.
as they were supposed to. Verse number 23, I saw that the Jews had married wives of Ashdod and Amnon and Moab, and their children, they spake half the speech of Ashdod, but they could not speak the Jewish language, but according to the language of each people. I took care of that. I took care of all of those things. Again, this section ends just like each one of those other section ends with something along these lines. Look at verse 29. Remember them, O my God, because they have defiled the priesthood and the covenant of the priesthood and the Levites. Thus cleanse I them from all strangers, and appointed the wards of the priests and the Levites, every one in his business, and for the wood offering at the times appointed, and for the first fruits. Here's the way it ends. Remember me, O my God, for good. Here he is as the cleanser. And what's he doing? Well, he's getting that guy out of the temple. Well, he's making sure they don't sell and buy and sell on the Sabbath day. Well, he's making sure that they don't marry off their daughters to the people of the land anymore, of the world. He's doing all of those. Yeah, whose work's he doing? Whose work's he doing, Rodney? He's doing God's work. Doesn't make any difference whether he's a cupbearer or a builder. He's doing God's work. Doesn't make any difference whether he's a cupbearer, a builder, or a banker. He's doing God's work. He's doing God's work. Doesn't make any difference whether he's a cupbearer, a builder, a banker, or a governor. He's doing God's work. Doesn't make any difference whether you're cupbearer, builder, banker, governor, or cleanser. He's doing God's work. He's doing God's work. So when he asked God, oh my God, remember me for good, what can he expect? What can he expect? He can expect his God to remember him for good. I don't care. I don't care what we're involved in. It's our work as well. Here you go. Philippians 2, 14 through 16. Do everything without grumbling and arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. Was that the way it was in Nehemiah's day? How about in the day and age you're living? A warped and crooked generation, that you will shine among them like the stars of the sky as you firmly hold the word of life. That's what Nehemiah was doing. And that's what each and every one of us need to determine to do with our lives. It doesn't make any difference. It doesn't make any difference. It doesn't make any difference what we're doing at these different stages in our lives. The thing that needs to be common in every one of them is we need to be working for the Lord. Working for the Lord. Paul says to the church at Philippi, I didn't underline this part, and then I'll be able to boast about the day of Christ, that I did not run or labor in vain. Hard to be ashamed of Nehemiah, isn't it? Hard to be ashamed of him. He's one of those characters we read about in the Bible who you just don't find anything negative about. Why? Because in every stage of his life, whatever it was necessary for him to do, whatever. To him, that's the work of the Lord. That's God's work. And he did it. He did it. And he's one of those who will shine like the stars of the sky when you read about him in this book of Nehemiah. This evening, if you stand in need of the invitation of our Lord, we encourage you to come as together we stand and sing.